Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the South Bay Show, Manhattan Beach 360, on August 19th, 2016. Live, love, laugh, and leave a legacy. That's what we do here in the South Bay of Los Angeles, and it's a beautiful place to do just that.
The South Bay Show is brought to you by the Manhattan Beach Chamber of Commerce. The Manhattan Beach Chamber of Commerce has been serving the city of Manhattan Beach for over 60 years, and they are dedicated to promoting a strong local economy by supporting the community, providing valuable business connections, and representing business with government. The Chamber staff is focused on providing its membership with the tools and resources to help businesses grow and thrive within the community. Their goal is to continually support the individual efforts of business as they work to support the growth of the local economy. For more information on how the Manhattan Beach Chamber of Commerce is working with member businesses and the City of Manhattan Beach to support that growth, visit the website at manhattanbeachchamber.com or call 310-545-5313. I hope you don't have your mute button on, Joe.
I'm your host, Joe Terry, without the mute.
Yeah.
And you can read all about our many adventures on Facebook at facebook.com/The South Bay Show. Persistence, passion, principle, and purpose. That's what we talk about here on The South Bay Show. And, of course, I'm not alone because of our great partnership with SouthBayByJackie.com. And producer of the South Bay Show, Jackie Balestra. Hey, Jackie, how are you doing today?
I am doing well. I'm doing great, as a matter of fact.
Fantastic. And boy, Jackie, last night was Esau, wasn't it?
Yes, yes. Did you go?
No, I was not able to go this time.
Well, you missed it. You have to wait until next year.
Yeah.
It was so great. You know, it's funny. I put down all three dates this summer in my calendar. Right. I got them in my calendar, you know, as soon as they announced the dates. And John and I went in June. Mm-hmm. And then last month, what I did was I got a group of girlfriends together and we went. There were about, I don't know, 10, 12, 13 of us. Some came, some went, you know. Mm-hmm. And then it was funny. Wednesday night before I went to bed, I looked at my calendar to see what was on tap for Thursday. And I went, oh, the last Elsa Gundo Art Walk is tomorrow. And I said to my husband, I said, you want to go with me? And he said, oh, no, I can't. He was going to be in meetings in Santa Clarita. He said, I'm probably not going to get home till about 9 o'clock. Mm-hmm. And I said, oh, okay. So I went by myself. And I really, really enjoyed it. You know, it's funny. It was so much fun last month with all the girls. But, you know, getting them from one place to another was like wrangling cats. you get a group of 10 or 12 people or whatever, and I'm trying to herd them here, and I'm like, okay, we got to go to the next place, you know. So I went by myself last night, and first off, I just love walking all over El Segundo. That was nice.
Yes.
It was a lovely evening, and, I saw a ton of people I knew, saw a lot of great art. Matter of fact, it was the first time I really had a chance to just focus on the art. And I found a piece that I fell in love with.
Oh.
Photographer Brent Broza. I don't know. Are you familiar with him?
No, not yet.
He's local, Hermosa. And he does a lot of – he was over at South Bay Customs, you know, the motorcycle shop.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was maybe the last place on my walk. And he had some very large photographs, I guess, that he put on canvas.
Yeah.
And I just found one that I absolutely love, and it's a little pricey. So I'm gonna show it to JB and see if he likes it as much as I do. I might have to get it. It's really, really. It's one of those pieces that. It just grabbed me, you know. It just grabbed me. I found it very soothing. It was a seascape, very simple seascape. Anyway, that was the last art walk for the season.
Wow.
Now we have to wait until next year. for the next one. But it was so great. And as I said, I ran into all sorts of people. I ran into Holly Socrates and Oh, and you know who else I ran into? It was so funny. I ran into people on the streets. I ran into people in the venues. I was walking down the street and I ran into John Gran from North Redondo Beach Business Association.
Yes.
Yes, he gave me some big news.
What?
He's running for City Council District 4 seat.
Okay.
Next election.
Ah.
Yes. So that's exciting. That was exciting to hear. So, it was a great night. I went all three nights again this year. I absolutely love that event. So, everybody put it on your calendars for next year. It's the third Thursday of the summer months, June, July, and August.
And, of course, it's BROZAPhoto.com.
Yes, Broza Photo, yeah.
BrozaPhoto.com, and he is good.
He is. Yeah,
wow.
So I gotta jump on that. I think I want that photograph.
Okay.
Yes, so.
Awesome. Well, I had a very boring night, and I will pay for that with.
I carry all the weight in this team, Joe. I carry all the weight in this team. I'm the one that is going out and seeing everything and doing everything. And
yes. Someone's
slacking.
Gotta do it.
Yeah.
Well, I'm excited though, Jackie, because you know, of course, I love starting businesses. I love helping other entrepreneurs work out the issues, the problems. We've talked often about how every business owner should have three professionals that they trust in their pocket, a good attorney, a good accountant, and a good insurance agent. But we've added
to that over the years.
Yeah, we have.
Yeah.
But there's one other professional that many small business owners, especially startups, might consider. And we have a guest that can really talk to that issue. Jackie, who's our guest today?
Our guest this morning is Tony West from SCORE, the volunteer organization of the Small Business Association. After graduating from the University of the Pacific in 1962 with a bachelor's degree in industrial management, Tony moved to Manhattan Beach to start a career in manufacturing. He worked for Willamette Industries, a major manufacturer of paper and packaging products. In 1970, he started his own business, Corrugated Specialties, Inc., and began manufacturing corrugated shipping containers and displays in a building slightly larger than a garage. In 1994, he sold his company to Union Camp Corporation. It had grown to $25 million in annual sales and a staff of 120 and continues to operate today as part of Fiber Containers, Inc. In 1998, Tony retired and started his service with SCORE, the volunteer organization of the SBA, where he helps clients with startups, refocusing, cash management, and mergers and acquisition. Tony lives in Hermosa Beach with his wife, Linda, where they enjoy hiking, traveling, and visiting their children and grandchildren. Now, Tony has SCORE appointments every Thursday at the Manhattan Beach Chamber office, and this morning we're going to discuss how his services can help you and your business succeed. Welcome to the program, Tony. We're so glad you could join us this morning.
Thank you, Jackie.
Well, thank you very much, Tony, for joining us because, you know, one of the things, you know, we talk a lot about, the retail sector here in the South Bay. Of course, it's a very vibrant retail sector, and it's kind of interesting. Of course, our favorite subject, food, the retail sector here is amazing, the number and the quality of restaurants. But there are so many other parts to starting a business and so many other kinds of businesses. So first of all, let's talk about your background, Tony. What kind of a business was it that you had started here?
I started my business was in Los Angeles, central Los Angeles, and I was basically die cutting small containers out of corrugated fiber.
Okay.
That was how I started. And then as I acquired more machinery and grew, I purchased a building in Vernon, and the company continued to grow. And then in 1987, I merged with one of my friendly competitors who we've gotten to know each other through an association and continued to grow to 120 employees, and had no intention of stopping, really. We were just kind of chugging along. We were quite engaged with the movie industry and making large standees for video releases and video rentals and theaters. Those are the big cutouts that you can see when you walk into a movie theater today.
Right.
You don't see too many of them, and there are not too many rental opportunities anymore. And a large company, Union Camp Corporation, which was the sixth largest paper company in the world, knocked on our door and wanted to acquire us and wanted to be present in the L.A. market.
Right.
And that's where we said, I think this is an opportunity. You don't sell a business like you sell a house. I mean, a buyer comes along. We were both in our early 50s, and so we sold the company and continued to work for them for about 4 years. I personally, and my partner actually, got really impatient working in a corporate environment since they just had too many meetings and too many ties walking around trying to make MBAs walking around trying to make decisions for us. So I retired in 1998. And I had a sailboat, and I worked on my sailboat and had plenty to do, and got interested in SCORE. And so SCORE has a chapter in Los Angeles. SCORE is an acronym for Service Corps of Retired Executives. That's the original name, and it was founded in 1964.
Now, Tony, before you go on, I just wanna put a full hard stop there. You have had a classic manufacturing in America experience, starting a business, die cutting, machinery, 120 employees. So you've been through births, deaths, divorces, all the things that you know, having 120 people in any endeavor, you're going to go through a lot of life with those people.
That's right.
Can you just, for a moment, because a lot of entrepreneurs today don't have any experience with that and the whole idea of employment, you know, small businesses employ the vast majority of people in this country. Can you just talk a little bit about that in the large? I mean, that experience of having 120 people dependent on their daily bread for you and your partner after you merged to have a successful business and to meet that payroll.
Well, it certainly has a lot to do with your as an owner of a small business, your personal values. And for me to be successful, you know, I really operated my business the way I had operated my life so far, which was, you know, basically trust first. You know, you trust your employees, you trust your suppliers, and you trust your customers. You not only have employees who are dependent upon, and their families dependent upon your success, but you have suppliers as well. And then you're serving your customers. So I built strong relationships based on trust and respect. Respect for my employees, respect for my suppliers, and respect for my customers. We had strong loyalties with our suppliers, and when paper supplies became tight, our relationships with our suppliers continued very strong. So that's really how I grew and how I operated and how I continue to operate today. It's just basically core personal values that I don't compromise.
I got to jump in here a second. Tony, big question. Would you be able to do today what you did when you started that company? Would you be able to do the same thing in today's economy?
Well, I mean, my answer is kind of I have two answers to that. First of all, I could not do necessarily exactly what I did, but I think I could, you know, if I found an opportunity and a niche and applied my personal principles, I think I could succeed. Our industry itself has changed dramatically, and there are a lot of, there's just a whole different way of doing business with computers and the internet and ability to seek pricing, you know, in a minute from a multiple of suppliers. It's just changed, and relationships have changed. I think it would be a different ball game, but I don't know that that's what prevents you from succeeding.
I only ask because, you know, manufacturing in America has been such a big topic on the political scene, especially. That's
right.
That's why I asked. Yeah.
So my business evolved. Things evolved while I was in business as well. You know, manufacturing was leaving Los Angeles and rapidly because of air quality issues. Furniture manufacturing left totally. Segments of LA manufacturing, all the automobile assembly plants left.
Mm-hmm.
There were a lot of small companies supplying these guys, and we made packaging. I originally made packaging for that. So everything changed, and I kind of shifted my focus as things changed. I mean, you know, customers disappeared because the process has changed.
You mentioned briefly your relationship with Hollywood and the insatiable need that they had for those, 8 or 10 or 12 foot high statuette looking things. How did that relationship start, and what kind of relationship was that? Was it a good one?
Okay, those are the toughest characters to deal with, in my opinion.
That's great.
You know, you're dealing with buyers in that industry who somehow believe they were actually in the movie as well.
Yeah.
And they're calling the stars by their first names and everything, and they're
right.
You know, it's just a whole ego thing, and I was a box maker, and it was a little difficult, but we slid into it, you know. I mean, someone came and said, hey, can you make one of these? This is when the standees first happened,
right,
with Warner Brothers, and we said, well, sure, I guess we could, and next thing you know, they grew to be about 20% of our business.
Right.
And my son-in-law was actually a sales rep. We had 14 sales reps in the West at when we sold, and we covered different industries and different geographic parts. We had covered the wine industry up, and we had a guy up in the wine country making premium wine packaging, selling that, and then we had a couple people dealing with Hollywood, and all those decisions were made locally,
right.
But we had to farm out manufacturing sometimes to the East Coast or Chicago,
right,
for distribution purposes.
Right. No, this is very interesting because and telling, I think, for a new business owner. We're going to talk about SCORE in a minute, but the key is you develop these relationships. They're going to be idiosyncratic. I mean, the customer is always right. They're going to be weird and different, and, you know, they're going to be themselves, and they're going to tell you how, you know, what a great time they had with Tom last night, you know, because they're, you know, friends with Tom Hanks or Tom,
right,
whoever.
Tom Cruise.
Yeah.
Tom Selleck.
Yeah.
A lot of Toms.
Lots of Toms.
Toms.
That is so funny because also I think, you know, one of the things about Hollywood as a industry is it is even now very much based on relationships. They talk about that a lot, and they as an industry still try to tend to work that way. But of course, every industry has changed, as you said. Your business changed. Lots of internet and price shopping and all of that. 14 reps, selling into multiple industries at one time, that was a very successful business.
It really was. And we grew the business, you know, really based on our principles. And we paid, our sales reps were 100% commission. And a lot of them made a lot more than I took out of the business every year.
What?
And that was great. You know, we didn't really care how much they made, because the more they made, the more our company made.
Right.
And they were based, their commission was based on a percentage of our profit on a job, a given job and multiple jobs. So they were very driven. It was hard to find a good sales rep. And quite frankly, I'd say 80% of our sales reps we trained ourselves had no experience. Most of them were like right out of college, perhaps.
Right.
And they just had that desire to succeed and that drive,
right.
And they worked very smart.
You know, this is every entrepreneur's dream. Find a need, you know, find what's missing,
right.
Create a business,
right.
Build it up, be successful, and then have some big company come and want
to
buy
it
out.
Sell it to the suits. Sell it to the suits.
That's everybody's dream.
Yeah. Yeah, and that was eye-opening, too. Even though I had started out working in a large corporation, I'd forgotten how silly sometimes those actors can be, just trying to juggle themselves. You know, their mission was to make themselves look as good as possible and
right.
not necessarily
right.
focus on bottom line.
So now that brings us to the service core of retired executives. Tell us about SCORE. How did you fall into that?
Someone had told me about it when I was planning on leaving my consulting job with the company who acquired me. And, so I just had that in the back of my mind, and I knew I had plenty to do with our grandchildren and my sailboat, and which I kept right down in King Harbor.
Hmm.
And so I wasn't really worried about what I was going to do, but I wanted to try this out. And it was just a great organization. It has changed as well, which I'll get into later on in the conversation if you would like. But it's evolved, and it was a bunch of really old guys. I was just the biggest surprise our chapter had seen. These guys were all in their late 70s and early 80s, and I was in my early 50s.
Hmm.
And you know, SCORE, we had no website. We had no electronic resources. All of our material was in filing cabinets, and at the Manhattan Beach Chamber, where I had my appointments,
mm-hmm.
I had these big filing cabinets filled with brochures that would get out of date, you know, very fast. And since then, it's become all electronic.
Mm-hmm.
And SCORE was founded in 1964. We have over 14,000 mentors in the U.S., and we are a partner of the Small Business Administration, the SBA. But we are not part of the SBA. But they provide funding. About 50% of our operating funding comes directly from the SBA.
Really?
As a grant, yeah.
Oh, that's interesting. So the Small Business Administration is state-funded, is that correct?
Federally. That's
federally?
Federal funding.
Okay. So 50% of SCORE's, and is that local or all over the country, 50% of SCORE's revenue comes
well,
from the SBA?
Well, that's kind of a general percentage, because locally then we have to raise the balance. So we
right.
have workshops. We have over 30 workshops in L.A. alone that are given at several locations throughout the L.A. basin.
Right.
And our chapter is just Los Angeles County.
Right.
There's a chapter in Ventura County. There's a chapter in Orange County, San Diego County,
okay.
and so on throughout the state and the country.
Okay. Do you get assistance of any kind from, like, the state or from the county government?
No.
Okay.
But we get grants from B of A, for example, other, some banks, B of A being one of them. We've gotten assistance from other corporate sponsors, and they do it, you know, either locally to your chapter or on a national level. They'll support. They might even pay for the printing of one of our handbooks that we pass out.
Right.
That, and we allow them to put their name on the back.
Right. Wow.
So that's
okay.
That's one way to get one of the ways we get money. And the main way is the process of putting on these workshops.
Now, the local chapter, is it Manhattan Beach specific or is it South Bay specific? What's the sort of their range and territory?
Well, so you really, when I started, you really just kind of say, well, there's a need. It's really kind of freewheeling. When I started anyway, you say, here's a need, here's a gap.
Mm.
And then you go out and find a place to support you.
Mm-hmm.
The Manhattan Beach Chamber, you know, had a SCORE counselor, and he was very ill. And I moved from City of Commerce, where I was helping. I'm kind of semi-bilingual.
Mm-hmm.
So I was working in an area where I needed to use Spanish a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to go to City of Commerce, and I jumped at this opportunity to help this guy out in Manhattan Beach, and eventually took that over. And that was within a year or so or two after I started.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm curious. So do most of the local chambers have a SCORE rep, or is it or are you a regional guy just happen to be based in Manhattan Beach?
I just happen to be based at the Manhattan Beach Chamber.
Okay.
A chamber is a perfect place for us to operate out of because they're also a resource. But also, I can operate. Well, Torrance, I think, operates out of the library sometimes. Some mentors, we're called mentors now, not called counselors. Some mentors are work at like a Starbucks or a coffee place.
Right.
And so that's really how that's changed.
Mm-hmm.
You just kind of go where your clients are and what works well.
I love the fact of being based at the chamber. That's very, very convenient. And, of course, there's other resources there, as you say, and then there's the chamber itself. That's very convenient.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a good fit. That's a good fit.
Absolutely. Now, Tony, we're going to take a station break, but after the break, I would like to go through the standard, you know, process. Someone walks in the door. I even have a scenario for you. Someone walks in the door with a particular kind of business in mind, and I want to talk about the process that you take them through, starting square one, first meeting. And that'll be very helpful, I think, and explanatory for people. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to the South Bay Show, and we're talking with Tony West of SCORE. It's what's the acronym again, Tony?
Well, it was called the Service Corps of Retired Executives, but now SCORE is just a word that's trademarked, and we are called Counselors to America's Small Business.
Okay.
So they changed that about 4 years ago.
Okay. Counselors to America's Small Business. Most people know, but if you didn't know, 75% and perhaps 80% and more of all Americans are employed by small businesses. Sure, there's big companies that employ thousands, but most people work for small businesses. And this is where the rubber meets the road in terms of the economy and jobs and all of that. And we're thrilled to have Tony with us. If you'd like to ask a comment or question, we'd love to have you. Please give us a call at 714-242-5288. That's 714-242-5288. We'd love to have a comment or question. Now, Tony, let's get into a scenario. Someone comes in the door and they say, I want to be an urban farmer. Urban farming is very in and popular right now. People are doing very well growing various kinds of crops in warehouses and in fields that were formerly occupied by warehouses or homes. Detroit has become quite an urban farming mecca in terms of technology and so forth. What's the first meeting about?
Well, the first meeting is really just an introductory meeting, and we kind of find out what the goals are for the client.
Mm.
And then the process that I use is, explain what your idea is and what's unique about it and what are its benefits.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's your idea. And then you need to determine your market. So who are you going to serve? Where are they likely to be located? And where are they likely to go to seek your product or your service? And if it's in Manhattan Beach, say, is it a good city to reach them? Or is there maybe a better city to reach your market? You need to discover who your market is and where they are and how they're going to get to you, whether it's electronically or physically.
Now, if someone is developing this idea, but they have a full-time 9-to-5 job, are there opportunities to meet with you after hours or on the weekends?
Well, we have several. Now we have several ways to communicate. Of course, email or telephone is one way. An initial meeting needs to be face-to-face, pretty much.
Mm-hmm.
But we do have clients who are strictly email clients to some counselors. Some mentors are actually only email. They don't like to have face-to-face confrontations, I guess. And other ones, now they're just starting this month, a Skype scenario. It's a Skype form of communicating, and so the mentor and the client can be right at home. And that's a very, very growing way of offering services.
Right.
People are giving piano lessons on Skype, and they're doing a number of things.
Right.
So we're starting that as well.
Right. Right.
So, yes, we certainly don't want them to quit their day job until they absolutely have to.
Right. Now, you said something confrontational. I mean, I want to go through the standard scenario, but is there a measure of, you have to, if someone says, I've got this great idea. I want to create these round discs of vinyl and then press them with sound in them. And I know it's going to be a big business someday. And you say, well, the record industry is not a great big business to get into these days. Or, actually, I'm all wrong because, of course, vinyl has made a huge comeback. But are you obligated as a counselor to say, maybe you should come up with a different idea?
I try never to judge the idea. I'd be the first guy to say the hula hoop was a stupid thing here. Or perhaps even the internet, but I feel obligated to guide them into answering those questions themselves by asking them, well, what is how large is your market and where do you believe your market is likely to head, and then how do you think you can get into that market. You know, who is your competition? Are they direct? Are they selling direct? How do you plan to market your product or service? Are you going to reach your clients direct? Are you going to do a website? And that answer presents a whole additional set of questions. Like, yeah, I'm going to get a website, but you know, it's almost built, as a matter of fact. And then they go, how do you think I can get people to come to my website? And so they have to really learn what, you know, web marketing entails.
Right.
Web-based marketing is a whole different thing, and you have to be able to drive people to that site, and that takes unique strategies.
Right.
So that you know, that how they're going to get to there, and then how does the client measure up? What are their strengths and weaknesses, and can they provide all the skills that are necessary to move this project forward?
Mm-hmm. Or do they need partners or something like that?
Yeah, or other skills that aren't available, like through a partner.
Right.
And then what are the capital requirements? How much money do you need? And if some clients are, you know, they have really bad credit and they have no money.
Right.
And the first thing they ask is, well, are there any grants? But there really aren't any business grants to speak of. There could be, if you were developing in an economically depressed area, then there could be opportunities to get support to government.
Mm-hmm.
But basically, people don't, you know, grants are a risk for the grantor that you don't really, you know, you have to be, usually there is a grant to serve a public need of some sort.
Right.
But not for a private business.
Right. So do you have to have a business plan to begin business operations? What's your take on that as a scorecard?
Well, definitely, you know, a plan. And I believe in business plans. What I don't believe in, though, are plans that are a packaged template that all you do is fill in the blanks.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of a – I've had clients come in with a 3/4-inch thick business plan that they don't even know anything about.
Right.
Someone has prepared it for them, or, which is terrible, or they have prepared it themselves by filling in the blanks, and they don't even know the reason for the questions or the basis of the answers.
Right.
And so it can be on a napkin. It depends on what kind of business you're doing. I've had a guy come in with a, you know, he worked for someone else mowing lawns and taking care of grass, and he wanted to buy his own pickup, but himself.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a simple business. I mean, he didn't need a business plan.
Right.
He didn't need any, just, you know, needed a capital from a credit card, perhaps.
Right.
He had one. So there was just a whole wide range of sizes and needs, but a plan that takes you from how to start to how to operate, and to show, it's kind of like having a virtual business. I tell my clients to pretend you're really doing this.
Yeah.
If you want to do smoothies in Manhattan Beach, are you going to go to Netlocks and spend $8,000 to $10,000 a month on rent? Now, how many smoothies do you really have to make?
Yeah. Too many.
And they'll go, well, there's a lot of traffic there. And so maybe I ought to do it in Lawndale on Inglewood Avenue and Marine or something, but no one buys smoothies there, perhaps. You know,
yeah.
So there's an equilibrium for rent, and you have to be able to make sure that you can, that's your biggest single burden, really, is the rent.
Right. Right. Retail.
I got to ask. So Tony, can people come? Can people make an appointment? When people make an appointment with you, can they be in any stage of where they are with their business? Can they come in and talk with you if they're just in the thought process, they have an idea, but they haven't done anything yet, or maybe they've already started a business. Maybe they've started something that they're working out of their home and they want to move into a brick and mortar space, or somebody that is already well established, but maybe they're kind of in a rut or they're stuck, you know, maybe they hit that goal of their client, but they want to grow. So can you help people in at any point in their
yeah,
business?
Yeah. All of the above. I mean, we have probably 60% startup inquiries and meetings at the initial meeting. And the other are people at any stage. During the economic downturn, we had a lot of people come in and they had lost their job and they were working at a well-paid job and had a 401k, and they wanted to take their 401k out, pay the penalty, and, you know, buy a Subway franchise. We help with franchises as well. And, you know, they've had no experience, perhaps, but they're desperate. I mean, you know, they're at that age, like 50 or something, where you're not as marketable as some young slick character.
As an employee, so that
they want to go into business.
I've been saying
so
that for years. 50 is the new unemployable, right?
Yeah, and you can't really. I mean, I feel like I can't really discourage them, but I can certainly try my hardest to get them to think clearly about this risk that they're taking in this 401k that they want to,
right?
Which is sacrosanct, really. I mean, they should try to find something that doesn't require them to do that.
Right.
So yeah, at any stage, I had a client just last week come in, and they're preparing to. They have a brewery, a microbrewery in Torrance, and they're preparing to expand. So, you know, they're looking at borrowing over $1 million.
Right.
So then I have a client the week before who was trying to figure out how to borrow $10,000.
Right.
So it's all the same, really.
Mm-hmm.
You have to have an ability to pay. You have to have a plan about how you're going to pay. You have to be able to do in a business plan a projection that says, you know, how little can I sell to not lose any money
mm-hmm.
on a monthly basis? You know, what's my break even?
Mm-hmm.
And how am I going to support myself while I'm ramping up my business?
These are the things that keep business owners up late at night.
Yep, they do. Kept me up late at night. I always had a test. I had a little acid test when I bought equipment. Our industry was very equipment heavy, and the equipment was being developed all the time. So you had to keep up with the times. And, you know, it wasn't unusual to spend $500,000 to $1 million on a piece of equipment. And I usually financed it because I didn't have that kind of cash sitting around. And my test was, if the thing showed up, you know, I maybe had done some sort of analysis that, you know, whether the piece of equipment would help me grow my business, and I buy it, and the thing shows up, and the lease payments or the purchase payments are $15,000 a month. What happens if that machine blows up or falls off the truck due to my carelessness of unloading it, and it never runs? What's going to happen to my business? Can I make those payments without that machine? And is it going to hurt my business to the point where we can't eat as a family, or my kids can't go to college? And if the answer was yes, then I went ahead. It was it was my final acid test.
There are two things going on in the world today that I think are new. I hear a bunch of ads on the radio today, Tony, from franchisee or franchisers. I just heard an ad yesterday on the radio from Papa John's Pizza, and they're really, really a lot of them advertising, especially on satellite radio, all kinds of different franchises. Is that a good way to go, do you think?
you know, it has an equal amount of pluses and minuses, really.
Hmm.
First of all, franchise, one thing about a franchise that a lot of people don't realize is that they have a life.
Hmm.
All franchises have like a 5 or 10 year life. And they have to be renewed by the franchisor to continue. Or maybe they have a 20-year life. Whatever the life is, it's
yeah.
a life. There's an end. And
yeah.
it's no, so it's not like a non-franchise where, you know, you determine the life of your own business,
yeah.
Either by success or failure or just by deciding to leave.
Right.
So franchises control how much you charge. Signage, what products you can sell, and so they control because they need to protect their brand. So if you don't know anything about selling to the public, perhaps like a food franchise, it may be a way to get started. But you pay a price. You pay, you know, a piece of the gross. It's a lot harder to make money on one hand. On the other hand, they have a brand. They have marketing. I've had about a 50-50 feedback on franchisees who go into business.
Right.
And they are very highly regulated.
Right.
So that's a good thing. And they have to file with the government, and they
right.
they have to provide you with a I can't remember the acronym for that, but they have to provide you with a report that gives you a sense of their viability.
Now, not only do I see and hear lots of advertisements for different franchises of every description, I also hear a lot of ads for cash. You need, if you're in a business now and you need cash, just call 1-800-CASH-CASH-CASH, 1-800-CASH-CASH-CASH, because these companies take what you have in terms of assets, and I'm thinking of invoices, and they say you got $100,000 in invoices, we'll give you $80,000 and right now, and you know, I don't know. These don't sound like a good thing because these companies are getting cash. They're cash strapped. They're going to these other companies to get financing based on their invoices, and they're losing money because they're giving the essentially their profit margin to these financial institutions.
Yeah, and I feel that as really kind of appeals to the desperate side of a business cycle, perhaps.
Yeah.
You know, you have to give up margin like that to get cash that you can't, for some reason, get from your bank,
right.
which means there is a viability, there is a problem with your business right there.
Right.
But sometimes, you know, when you're caught with not enough cash to operate, sometimes it's because you've grown too fast.
Mm.
And your cash can't keep up with. Maybe there's a pretty big lag between acquiring, you know, purchasing and your receivables, and you need more cash. You know, usually a bank will cover that, but sometimes it won't if you're too new. And I think that's probably a viable. I mean, that's, you know, called factoring, really, and factoring has been going on in the garment industry for forever.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But when you hear people advertising, it's I don't know, my antennas go up for some reason.
Yeah. Okay, so we've met the client. We've established they have a market. We've established that they have a potentially a good location. If it's retail or if it's not retail, it's manufacturing, they find a good warehouse. Where's the next step? Because of course financing, that has to be in place. How long will SCORE be with you as a business owner? Will SCORE stay with you through your first and second and third year, or at any time? you can go back.
I mean, it's really cradle to grave. I mean, you know, you can come to score as often as you want. It's free. And you can if you need to, you know, have someone peeking over your shoulder for that whole growth process or that whole sustaining process, score will be there.
Right, right.
You just have to have the mentor, you know, be young enough to live that long.
Right.
But yeah, it's a great service for that you can get of a relationship going, and I've had clients for 10 years, and they come back, they're ready to do something big, maybe move to a bigger location.
Right.
Like one of the in Hermosa Beach, Soul Baby is one of my clients. That's a children's clothing store. They've moved 3 times, and I've just gone over. She just needs, a very good businesswoman, needs help. You know, needs someone, just a second set of eyes.
Right. Now, Tony, tell us your contact information to get in touch with you, the larger organization, or other mentors. How does that work? How is a business mentor relationship established?
Well, there are a couple of ways to make an appointment. With me, you can contact the Manhattan Beach Chamber by phone, mm-hmm. and just speak with someone in the office and ask to make an appointment, and they have my schedule. We have a shared calendar on Google,
mm-hmm.
so we all know what we're doing. That's one way. The other way, which is probably the best way, is to go to scorela.org. That's scorela.org.
Mm-hmm.
And go through their process of meet the mentor. You can search mentors by skill set. You know, maybe the guy's been in the garment business, or they've been in the movie industry, or the food services, manufacturing, or maybe you need help with your finance. So we all list ourselves and our skills. So
right.
you can go through that process, and then, you know, set up an appointment, hopefully in a geographic area that doesn't require you to go to Burbank or something at 9 in the morning.
Right.
So you have to make a decision as to who, you know, what you want to compromise. And that's a good way to start. And a lot of times I have an inquiry, and the person wants to do something, well, let's just say in the garment industry, that's really specific about that industry. And I'll say, well, you know, Bob out there on the west side has 30 years in that industry.
Mm-hmm.
And here's his contact information. So we send people, you know, back and forth. And we're not really competing with one another. So we send client prospects to one another, or refer them. And it's all done by email. It's very, very slick.
Hmm.
And so that's how our clients can find the best score resource mentor.
Okay.
What a great service to have. I mean, I wasn't aware of this. Were you aware of this, Joe, that this existed?
I was aware of it. I mean, the Small Business Administration, I was aware of that for many, many years.
Well, I was aware of the SBA, yes.
Yeah.
But the fact that they have experienced counselors, people
right.
that have been there, done that,
right.
and now they are taking their expertise and sharing it with people that, you know, are either starting up a new business, wanting to expand their business, maybe even wanting to sell their business, you know. That there's somebody that you can make an appointment with and go talk to about this. I think this is fabulous.
Yeah, it is.
I want to make one thing really clear about our services, and that is we sign a code of ethics when we sign up with SCORE about, first of all, not disclosing to anyone, you know, our conversations, because a lot of it's very personal.
Yeah.
And the other component of the code of ethics is to inform a client if we believe that we are also advising a competitor. or a potential competitor. We disclose that so they know who they're dealing with, and we want them to feel comfortable and not deceived.
Right, right. That's very, very important. The privacy aspect, and of course, competition, especially if it's a good idea. And there are some really, really good ideas that need protection and need
mm-hmm.
confidentiality. Fantastic. And I see when you meet a mentor on scorela.org, you can choose the different categories, whether it's food products or franchising or manufacturing or general business. And then, of course, you
exactly.
can choose location.
Exactly. And then there's also the national website, score.org.
Mm-hmm.
And they are really handy for lots of downloadable, printable material, including Excel spreadsheets on cash flow projections, profit and loss projections, break-even analyses. These are spreadsheets that are all set up. And all you do, and the instructions are provided, and if you have Excel, you just download that template,
right.
and you just plug in your numbers and change you can change all the headings, if you're not buying linen or something, you can delete that line and make your own projected profit and loss, which is really important when you're starting and risking at the outset.
Do you see SCORE growing as time goes on, or what's the trajectory of SCORE as an organization?
Well, I don't see it growing as it was, but I see it growing now as it has become because of using electronic media and Skype now and more telephone counseling and email.
Mm-hmm.
Those are all things that help us reach more people, and it's easier for the people to be reached quicker. I have had a relationship for about 2 years with an email client, and I just all of a sudden get a question,
mm-hmm.
and I answer it right back.
Mm-hmm.
And some people do over. Well, there's a guy in Palos Verdes who does about 250 contacts a month, either face-to-face or email. He's quite prolific.
Wow.
And he markets himself quite well.
So
I have other things. I don't really see that many people. I'm about 5 or 6 people a week, and then I have additional phone and email.
So each individual counselor determines how active they want to be.
It's like running your own business, and I used to be in charge of training for LA, and I've had guys come in that were more from the corporate world, and right away they want to know, well, when are you going to send me my clients?
Yeah.
And I go, hey, dude, you got to have to go out and get your clients. That's what you do here. You go out and get them, and
right.
you promote yourself
right.
locally.
Right.
And that's how you grow your own practice.
Right, right. Well, it's fascinating and fantastic, and for a new business, it's invaluable to have someone to bounce ideas off of. You can find out more by just going to the chamber. You can call the chamber at 310-545-5313 and make an appointment to see either Tony or is it Richard Terzian?
Terzian. Mm-hmm.
Terzian. Richard yeah. Terzian as well. Two great mentors here in Manhattan Beach. So close. Tony West, thank you so much for joining us today.
Well, sure. It was a pleasure. And I hope I was able to spread the word.
Well, thank you very much, scorela.org. Very valuable organization. We want to see more business owners thrive and employ people and support their families and their neighborhoods, and we're thrilled to have you. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you.
And of course, thank you, Jackie.
Always a pleasure, Joe.
That's our show, ladies and gentlemen. Fabulous, fabulous conversation. start your business today. We'll see you. Have a great, fantastic weekend. Bye-bye.